IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 49 of the Killing It Podcast. I am Dave Sobel, playing the role of Carl Polachuk today with my co-host, Ryan Morris. Hey there, Ryan.
Good afternoon, Dave, and everyone listening.
So Carl is off volunteering and doing really good work in Cambodia this week. He's working on a really cool project about helping women who've gotten out of the sex worker trade and trying to build tech business opportunities there. It's really cool stuff, but he doesn't have much of an internet connection. So
yeah, you know, we are notorious for doing this all around the world, and yet I think we have finally discovered the location from which one of our hosts may not actually log in real time. I mean, you're at home, Dave, in D.C. I'm in Dublin, Ireland, and it was one technological reach too far to also include Cambodia.
I know. What was cool about actually, so he has posted a little bit from on Facebook while he's been traveling. And the one thing that I noted that I hadn't thought of that was actually kind of an interesting detail was one of the reasons they were disconnected was they didn't want the geolocation information of where they're working shared, particularly from photos. And it was one of those details, as because we talk on privacy all the time, and I had not made that immediate leap, and I should have, as I think about privacy. That was kind of an interesting detail to think about, the way you've got to guard that information now when you're trying to do something discreetly.
Yeah, when you're trying to be discreet and protect an at-risk population, there are layers, and yes, they are listening to you. So yeah, that's not just us being paranoid. That's actually happening.
So listeners, you get Ryan and I today, but we have three cool topics, and we're going to bounce around a little bit on each of them because I think we've got some interesting stuff to churn through. So today, first off, and of course, links in the show notes, Channel Pro released some data of their state of the channel. And I think, Ryan, for you and I, this is like catnip. Anytime data comes out, there's just, I got to paw at it.
Yeah, there's never too much data, but there's always too little understanding of what the data actually means. So we're going to do it again.
Right. Now, I covered this some on the Business of Tech, so I'm going to pull four that I wanted to elaborate in a discussion format. So I'll read the four data points and then let's riff on this a little bit. The first data point, 65% of those surveyed in 2019 offered at least some managed services, and now the number for 2020 is 82%. For comparison, only 77% of those surveyed offered basics like network gear and PCs. So they're claiming that more managed services than those offering networking gear and PCs. Put a pin in that. In 2019, 50% of them rated their anxiety level about cybersecurity at 9 or 10 on a 1 to 10 scale, with 10 indicating the most concern. And this year, it went all the way up to 67%. Those making at least half their revenue from cloud has doubled from 8% to a modest 18%. Then additionally, finally, the data point, the portion of the audience selling infrastructure as a service solutions based on Azure, AWS, and other cloud platforms is up to 36% from last year's 32%. So Ryan, we got to start with with my favorite, which was the 82% of people delivering managed services.
Yeah, so that's one of those, hey kids, everyone on your block is doing it, you should do it too, except that you do it and you're somehow the only kid who showed up to participate in that activity. See, now I buy the general trend. There are more people paying more attention to managed services now than ever, but I fundamentally do not believe that when you say, are you a managed service provider, that everyone answering that question means the same thing they think they mean.
Yep.
Do you get all of your revenue, a chunk of your revenue, a meaningful contribution factor of your revenue? even if you go to that lower bar of, it doesn't have to be a majority, but it has to be a substantial contribution to your overall business results. Like, you know, it needs to be something that you pay attention to and actually budget for in your P&L structure. I just don't believe that 4 out of 5 solution providers surveyed are actually doing this, because I go to events all around this industry and I talk to hundreds upon hundreds of people who are like, yeah, totally know what managed services is, but I haven't figured it out yet. I still make all my money selling hardware and software, and I'm a classic reseller, value-added reseller. I 4 out of 5 dentists surveyed do not buy this data.
No, I'm 100% with you. And for me, it's actually that I think the other angle of it is that everybody's definition of managed services is now so different that I can't even know that by discussing it, that it is what we think it is. For me, I'm actively stopping using the phrase managed services provider, because I can't find any value in it anymore. It's a generic term to refer to somebody in technology services. And I'd rather just describe people as somebody, either a solution provider, a technology services business, or something more generic that way, because that actually implies what I mean it to, versus managed services, which the original idea is this very specific contract engagement where success is determined by outcomes and uptime, and not what it's become now, which is kind of a useless phrase.
Totally agree with that, right? And in fact, I have had more than one conversation this year with someone in the channel that I thought knew what the channel was. And when they used a term in a conversation that was clearly intended to indicate everybody who works in the channel, they used the phrase managed service provider. And it really rang a bell for me, and it said, oh, I'm sorry, that's not the general category, because the one thing we know for sure, and you know, again, I might die on this little hill, one component of managed services descriptors that I won't let go of is contract-based, proactive, outcome-rewarded, not activity-rewarded, and I just don't buy that that's the way most people's business models are set up. Now, again, is this a good thing that there are more people that want to be in that business? Absolutely. I think that's a very good idea. But let's be careful about lumping it all in and losing the value of what that distinction is truly about.
Yep, totally. So the other thing that I wanted to highlight on this was only 67% rank cybersecurity dangers at 9 or 10. That was my takeaway. Why this isn't 100% is, again, beyond me. I think that this is not enough people taking the threat seriously.
Yeah, 33% of you are apparently asleep and not responsible grown-ups, because everybody should be paying attention to that. But what I would absolutely still say is that, you know, you got to be careful about where you go with these percentages, right? I learned a long, long time ago, if you just stack rank popularity of things that are being done in the business of the channel, you know, you might read that and say, well, 88% of the people are doing this, then that's what I should be doing too. Except that is also where you're going to find the most competition and probably the most commoditization. And so you might want to go for the rare things. This is one of those, fundamentally violates that premise, right?
Yes.
This number should be higher, and nobody should be identifying with the crowd that says, nah, I think security's fine.
Right. I'm not overly concerned. It's like, really, you are asleep at the wheel. But back to your point though, what's interesting is I think you're right, but those cloud numbers where half your revenue from the cloud only at 18%. Now again, we could have a bit of an argument about what half of your revenue means and such like that, but I actually would have expected that number to be higher at this point.
Yeah, well, what that number says to me still, and it's distressing, that number is far higher when you read it from the end user's point of view. How many end users are spending roughly half or more of their IT dollars in the cloud? That's significantly higher than 18%. And if you do the arithmetic between those two, what that says is that there's more and more end users who are buying stuff not from you as a local channel trusted advisor. It's not because they don't believe that the cloud is valid or valuable. Clearly they do, because they're spending their money there. What it says to me is, well, the guy I usually buy my stuff from isn't really up to speed on the latest and greatest around this stuff. So I think I might need to look for somebody else. And it seems like aggregation of a vendor direct sales strategy via the web is good enough. Now, I don't believe that. And I think that's where we get a lot of the security problems from, a lot of the performance and ROI problems from. But it does say that, you know, all y'all that are in the channel, you cannot just, well, because it's difficult to adapt your business model, I think I'll ignore it. That's just absolutely not a valid response.
So, so you lead me then to my last takeaway on this one was, with 36% of them selling infrastructure as a service solutions based on Azure, AWS, and public cloud, I actually was encouraged by that. But my immediate jump to was the, yeah, so where are my tools for doing that? Because you know, so I'm going to pick on these, you know, anybody who is delivering tools intended for these technology service providers, because I'm not going to use the MSP phrase anymore. Where are the tools to do this? You're not helping your partners at all in this space. And they're now 36%, one third of them are selling this. And I don't see solutions to do it. There's a whole other space of cloud management that is not engaging with this population.
Absolutely correct. And I mean, that's the thing, right? You know that infrastructure, whether it lives here, there, or anywhere in between, still must be managed. And it is not good enough to say, well, the platform is up, therefore my instance on the platform is totally fine. Because of course, you know, the cloud aggregator is totally paying attention to every individual instance that's running in their infrastructure.
No, yeah.
Everybody, please proactively manage this stuff. You know, my final takeaway from that article, Dave, the one thing that I saw in there that I thought was really, really good news, everybody agrees with the basic premise that now's a really good time to be in the business of technology. Tons of interesting solutions. Customers intend to spend more money than they have in the past. The economy for solution providers is quite positive.
Mm-hmm.
If you're actually doing the right things for the right customers and not just commoditizing yourself with generic technology. So it's not, the universe is very attractive right now for the channel and all players in the business of technology. You just have to make sure you're doing it the conscientious business.
Well, I agree with that, but I think that what's interesting is when I look at this and I hear the messages from vendors on this, it isn't aligning with where I think those opportunities are. And so I think that's my takeaway, which actually in a way leads me to our second topic for the day. So I highlighted a press release that Asigra did, and I awarded them my first ever troll press release award. Because this is a press release that adds absolutely no value and is attempting to troll the other providers. They came out and they made a statement saying that they're warning that integrated backups in RMM will be a attack vector for these security attacks. But they offer no actual specifics of what the risk is. They actually offer no specific threat information, and they don't detail anything. So it's really just this press release intended to cause fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Now, I mean, it's a sales pitch. Let's be clear.
Oh, it's garbage. It's absolutely garbage. And I say so. But and I said this, and this is what I want to talk about. I said, shame on you, Asigra. Like, shame on you. And here's why. We're in a realm right now where we have real security risks in our businesses, in this space, to our customers. We are actively being attacked by an intensely smart and aggressive adversary. The criminals are smart, they are dedicated, and they are coming for our customers. They're coming for us as the middlemen into that. And I want to highlight that causing FUD like this is not good for the industry, and it's not good for all of us, because it muddies the waters and it makes it hard to tell what threats are real and what aren't. And we shouldn't be picking on one another. And I know you've got some thoughts here on FUD that I wanted to offer you to say.
Yeah, see, so I will respond to this one on a couple of levels, right? So the first one is, I believe that while it's common that FUD is the weakest minded approach to trying to convince somebody to give you something. The boogeyman is coming, and therefore give me your money and I'll protect you from the boogeyman. We've been doing that since the dawn of time, but allow me to actually make an observation based on psychology. The human animal is a very predictable animal. When we are threatened, we either run away or we fight, right? Fight or flight is the thing that we do. Now, if you actually succeed in frightening me with any of your marketing messages, I will either fight or flight. I will either tell you that you are wrong and I will fight against you, or I will just stop making decisions altogether. Now, I don't believe that most of us are easily scared anymore. Far too much silly stuff going on
right
on the internet. It's pretty tough to scare us anymore. So I don't think most attempts like this actually have the intended impact. But God forbid they did have the intended impact, because the result for an end user would be, oh, wait, the professionals who do this for a living can't even agree on the right way to do this stuff. So my takeaway is, I'm just going to stop buying technology systems, stop running applications, stop investing in my domain environments. I'm going to not run my business with technology, because even the smart people over there who should have it figured out, they don't have it figured out. Watch out what you're asking for when you're using FUD as a selling technique. But I'll go one step further, and you'll kind of see where I'm coming from on this. Beyond just the weak psychology of using that sales approach, the logic of their argument is aggregation reduces security, and separation, or best of breed isolation, is the only way to go. Oh, so what you're telling me is any point of aggregation, because I don't buy that it's only because it's aggregated inside an RMM. What you're telling me logically is that aggregation equals lower security. Hey, Mr. Channel Company, who wants to manage all of my technology services, didn't you just tell me that all in one, everything aggregated from a single provider is the only possible way to go? So what this vendor is actually telling me as an end user is, do not buy your backup from the same person you buy your security from, your network administration, et cetera. You got to break that back out and go best of breed, not just in your tools, but also in your providers. Hey, I think there might be a few folks in the industry who want to have a word with you about that sales pitch.
Well, yes, take that to its logical extreme, and that isn't good. Yeah, so I mean, this is one of those things. So I think, you know, and I think this is why we put together a podcast like this, is I want to call out this garbage. You know, I'm going to call this stuff out. Like, if you release a troll press release, I'm going to award you an award, the Troll Press Release Award. You know, this is not helping. You're not making, and you think you're going to come up with some great selling angle. You are making the conversation worse. You're making it harder for solution providers to actually sell this, and you are not focused on the actual threats that are bent there. And by the way, from an RMM perspective, if they get access to your RMM, you're done anyway. It doesn't matter if the software is integrated or not. If those tools are going to be used maliciously against your customers, you are done.
See, that's the whole point, right? Because aggregation is both at the code level, at the tool level, and at just the business operations level. So don't tell me that separate tools are not integrated by an MSP. I think that they would all beg to disagree. I'll take it a step further. You look at it from the RMM point of view. I look at it from an old-fashioned backup and data storage guy's point of view. That's where I was born in this industry oh so many years ago. And disintegrated backups are not a new phenomenon, and they have always been just essentially bad engineering, right? I remember doing a road show with one of the big mega backup vendors. I won't say their name. Literally, I'm thinking 23 years ago, we did this road show, traveled around the country, talked to people about, you know, the need for backup and the process for backup and all of this stuff. And the one thing that we said was, you know, if you have a backup of some of your information, but not all of your information, you're not going to get all the way back into business. So you need to have this integrated access. And here we are 23 years later, and people are still saying, oh no, backup is a special separate tool. It should be dealt with on its own out of the stack.
Right. Not so much, I think. I think there's a whole Stop it. So I think the points we're making here is, and from a marketing perspective, solution providers, people that are delivering technology really ought to think about the way FUD is used, because I mean, it can be used effectively, but it's hard, and you have to be careful with it. It seems easy. I think the better investment is in proper engagement, in proper education. It may be a longer term play, but it is far more viable in the long term, and you won't get called out.
It is more difficult. That's why so many people don't do it. It's hard. Let's just scare them and they'll give us their money.
Exactly. So let's move on to a third. Let's look forward a little bit, because you've been working on some stuff and having some discussions around an area that was incredibly interesting to me that I think we want to talk about. Tell me about low-code and no-code application development.
So I think it was, I don't know, probably 5 or 7 years ago in our industry, one of the things that really started to get traction was the idea that technology integrators and solution providers of all stripes needed to find a way to get higher into the technology stack, out of the plumbing and into not just the data, but also the applications and then the business processes that our clients are running. Now, that argument was going on for a while, but then the pushback started to come. Like, if I know how to sell you storage and networking and servers, and I can deploy all of these systems administration tools, you know, that's a radically different skill set, fundamental talent base than being able to write application code, right? In any of this that have ever taken a course or spent some time in the actual software side of this industry, you know, code is not kidding, right? It's not something to be taken lightly, and it is a sophisticated, highly valued element of our industry for a reason. Except now it is coming to the masses. It was only just 3 years ago now that Gartner recognized this phenomenon and stood up a new magic quadrant around low-code application development. They've identified literally hundreds of different providers who are building tools that all have the same essential objective: to facilitate the development of application absent the sophisticated boundary of code authoring. In other words, you, I, and everyone else has the opportunity to become a citizen developer. You have a business idea and you've got multiple disparate systems in your environment and you just wish you could tie them together. Now you can. You are an IT person, you've got all these different systems and they just don't spit data out in a common platform. Don't wait for someone else to write that code for you. Write it yourself and then prove it, improve it, and make it part of your DNA. I will tell you, this is one of the most exciting areas of technology that we've been working in over the last couple of years. And it has, the reason I'm mentioning it now, it has come out for an introduction to the masses. People who have never been coders in their lives are about to hear that they need to get themselves out of the just reselling other people's plumbing and into the business of, yeah, but what can you develop in custom applications to make this stuff even more valuable?
See, that's really interesting for somebody who delivers these technology services, because this is often the question that we've been asked to solve. But now, if the customer can do it themselves, we move into a very different advisory role, rather, because they can just go do it. Our job becomes less about helping them specifically make their dreams come true, but more about, have we got the right systems? Are they secured correctly? Is the data, the work they're doing, being backed up? Is it part of the, is it part of the overall system? This brings up all of those shadow IT, making sure that the business is aware of them, concerns. Like, there's a whole bunch of opportunity here, but it quickly shifts your role from gatekeeper to, you know, running behind enabler in a way. Like, well,
you're exactly right. Right. See, I look at it and I think, hey, I could be a software company. And that's quite literally true. You, me, any group of individuals who have a good idea now possess the graphical user interface to click and drag and create legitimately sophisticated business functionality in software applications. But every single time we put those kinds of very powerful tools into the hands of eager and yet not exactly conscientious professionals, the unintended consequences spiral radically and more rapidly than anybody could have imagined. Just because you, I, and anyone else with a keyboard could create a business application does not mean that we stopped and thought, you know, I wonder if this data that I'm linking to for my application is actually private data that should remain behind the firewall, and yet I've just exposed it. You want a really good example of this? So do a Google search on the WhatsApp folks, right? We all know who they are.
Yep.
Technology. Well, apparently somewhere between WhatsApp team and Google team, and being able to draw those things together and using this low code application development environment, they have now indexed the private conversations of their users, and those conversations are now not just not encrypted, but searchable and discoverable. And I guarantee you that that was not the intention when they were designing their security protocols, especially because they happen to be the encryption company, right?
Right.
The encrypted messaging company. That's not what they intended, but somebody with really positive intentions to create new functionality didn't think layer one, layer two, layer 2700. And they need a grown-up to be watching over them to make sure that they're not just accidentally violating the fundamental value proposition of the corporation.
Sure. And your role then moves from, you know, from being the one building these things to monitoring the data flows. You can know what systems are attached. You can watch the data come and go. You can make sure that this stuff is being managed effectively. That becomes more of your job versus the build it. And that's that shift, though. I mean, 3 years to go from it just sort of being identified to actually being rolled out is surprisingly fast.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? This is a concept, because I mean, I grew up in a world of, you know, rapid application development tools providers and object-oriented programming and the reusability of software functionality. Like, I understand all of those things that have been around for a long, long time. But being able to bring them into a point and click environment that is not just a toy, and it's not just another really fancy spreadsheet that somebody put a good user interface on the top of and called it software. No, no, no. This is bona fide code that comes from a graphical environment. And I believe that the proliferation of this is going to be what's interesting, right? They said right now, if you do kind of just a universe search on ISVs, independent software vendors, the people who package and sell a software product, right now, I don't know, 150, 125,000 of them, with the forecast being that within 5 or 6 years, there will be more than 1 million of them. Right? Like,
right.
You and I and everyone could be an ISV. You and I and everyone could be citizen developers inside of an organization building things that are unique and homegrown only to us. But no matter which of those you are, you're going to need an industry of professionals to go, hey, by the way, that's not what data is intended for. And you might want to actually think about the plumbing and the compatibility and the security of all this stuff. I think this one is, it has legs, and it comes to us in enough variety of formats that you, anyone listening to this podcast, need to be thinking proactively. How do I get myself, in addition to what I already do for a living, up and actively into the application layer of the technology stack? Because that is where all of the money is going.
Well, and at some level, your customers almost assume you're in that level just by your involvement in managing pieces of their technology. They yeah. don't necessarily differentiate between those various components. They just look at it as the whole technology piece. They could easily just assume you're doing that kind of work.
That's why they scratch their heads when they say, hey, this thing isn't working, and we do the pointing at each other in the industry. Well, you're going to have to talk to your tools vendor. No, that's a platform problem. The finger pointing of technology accountability is because everybody assumes you know what you're doing. Imagine if you actually did know what you were doing at the applications layer.
Imagine that. What a novel world. We've included a bunch of links. The link to an article about what low-code development is will include here in the show notes so that you've got access to it. Ryan, I think we're about out of time here. We ran through a couple of positives and some negatives all at the same time.
Yes, there's always good, bad, and ugly in our industry, and we hope to highlight all of them and steer this conversation as much as possible into there's so much opportunity, and there's so many good reasons to be excited about technology, so we hope we're dragging the gravity of the industry conversation in that direction.
We'd love to hear from you guys. Links, of course, in the show notes. Find us online, find us on all of the socials, and Carl will return, and all three of us will be around for episode 50. We're almost our year anniversary, a couple of weeks away, our year anniversary of doing this. How about that?
Heck yeah.
Well, that's it for this week. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Killing It Podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It Podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.